Belgic Confession, Article 12, entitled The Creation. We believe that the Father, by the Word, that is, by His Son, hath created of nothing the heaven, the earth, and all creatures as it seemed good unto Him, giving unto every creature its being, shape, form, and several offices to serve its Creator. That He doth also still uphold and govern them by His eternal providence and infinite power for the service of mankind, to the end that man may serve his God. He also created the angels good to be His messengers and to serve His elect, some of whom are fallen from that excellency in which God created them into everlasting perdition, and others have, by the grace of God, remained steadfast and continued in their primitive state. The devils and evil spirits are so depraved that they are enemies of God and every good thing to the utmost of their power, as murderers watching to ruin the church and every member thereof, and by their wicked stratagems to destroy all, and are therefore by their own wickedness adjudged to eternal damnation, daily expecting their horrible torments. Therefore, we reject and abhor the error of the Manichees, of the Sadducees, who deny the existence of spirits and angels, and also that of the Manichees, who assert that the devils have their origin of themselves, and that they are wicked of their own nature, without having been corrupted. Now let's read Ezekiel chapter 29, Ezekiel chapter 28 rather, verses 11 through 19. Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19. Ezekiel 28, verse 11. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and say unto him, Thus saith the Lord God, Thou sealest up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering, the sardius, topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle, and gold. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created, till iniquity was found in thee. By the multitude of thy merchandise they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Thy heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings, that they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities, by the iniquity of thy traffic, or trading. Therefore will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee, and it shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. All they shall that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee. Thou shalt be a terror, and never shalt thou be any more. Tonight we are continuing our study of Belgic Confession 12, though in this article we're ranging further afield than is usual in our Belgic Confession classes. We've had 12 weeks on creation and the angels. Tonight we begin the devil and the demons. We're going to start by looking at the fall of the devil. Belgic Confession, Article 12, makes it very clear that all the angels, including the devil and the demons, were created, that they were created good and in excellency, and that was their primitive state. Those are the words used in paragraph 2 of Belgic Confession 12. And then we read that some, namely the devil and the demons, are fallen from that excellency and now are so depraved that they're the enemies of every good thing. They're filled with wickedness and corrupted. And in our class tonight, we're going to consider in some depth, in a lot of depth, Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19, the passage we read together earlier. And the key question is, of whom does the prophet write? And first of all, we should consider that the prophet writes about the king of Tyre alone. This is the position of many commentators. He writes about the king of Tyre alone. Now, the king of Tyre and Tyre receives a very lengthy treatment in Ezekiel, longer here than anywhere else in God's word. It begins with chapter 26, verse 1. The whole of 26, the whole of 27, and the big half of 28, that's over 2.5 chapters, deal with Tyre and its king. The king of Tyre was an ungodly ruler over a city-state north of Israel, which was a maritime power, Tyre was, on the eastern Mediterranean coast. Shipping trade and vast wealth. So Ezekiel 28, verses 11 through 19, is a lamentation, that's the word used in verse 12, a lamentation because Tyre is going to be destroyed. Destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Now, if you look with me, and you'll want to keep this passage open all night, at verse 12. This king of Tyre is a very wise and beautiful man. Verse 12. Verse 13, to continue this way of reading the passage, verse 13 describes the great court and palace of and domain of the king of Tyre. It's like Eden. His wealth is indicated by the fact that he has many precious stones bejeweling his palace, and gold. Expensive musical instruments abound, and therefore high quality music. That's verse 13. Now verse 14 says, "Thou art the anointed cherub." And if we are to apply this to the king of Tyre, it would mean that he is anointed as king in God's providence to guard and protect his people. That's one of the major ways of understanding the role of a cherub. And according to verse 14, he is on God's holy mountain with its precious stones, which would then mean his beautiful palace. Now, verse 15 says, "Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created, till iniquity was found in thee." And the day in which he was created, according to this method of interpretation, would be the day in which he was created king, the day of his coronation. And then he sinned as a king, so he lost his kingdom. Verses 16 through 18 refer to his sin in various ways. Keep looking at the passage, that's it. He had great wealth through his trade, and then Liking his wealth, he used violence to get his own way. Then he became proud in his beauty and wisdom because he was a great king. Verse 17. By his sin he defiled his sanctuaries, and he committed a multitude of iniquities. Verses 16 through 19 refer to God's judgment upon him. Because of his sin, God casts him out of his strong and wealthy palace. Verse 16. According to verse 17, he's thrown by God to the ground for kings to look upon him. Fire and ashes are the judgment of Tyre in verse 18. And people are astonished, verse 19. They're horrified at his demise, and he will never rise again. Now, what do you think of that? Any comments?
It's talking about the devil.
Philip thinks it's talking about the devil, and I will reveal my hand. That's where I'm going to. Yeah?
It's a bit too far fetched. You know, calling him an anointed cherub on the holy mountain of God. I think to interpret that as him just being king and in his palace, I think it's just too much to take in.
I'd have to say I'm very pleased with the comments, because that's the way I'm going too.
Verse 13 says that in the day that thou was created, and it's rare to use that type of language, just merely talking about a human being as such.
Mm-hmm.
It could be used, I suppose, but generally it's not really used mm-hmm. for it.
Now, if you're reading Ezekiel's oracles against the nations that begin in chapter 25, dealing with Ammon, and then you come into Tyre, and after this you deal with Egypt. There's four chapters on Egypt coming up, and then you come to this part. It makes you sit up. There's something unique and distinctive in this.
But the king of Tyre's palace would not be described like that palace, the precious stones. It's really, you know, no matter how beautiful a palace is, a palace on this earth, it could not possibly be described like that. I can't see it.
Okay, now let's go to a second way of interpreting the passage. Several people see Adam in this passage. For instance, Matthew Henry, he says the passage deals with the king of Tyre, and it suggests and points forward and refers to or alludes to Adam. Right? There's a more modern commentator, John B. Taylor, on Ezekiel, and his comments are pretty brief, but he's even more emphatic that it definitely alludes to Adam. Kyle, the German commentator, he's very good, he emphasizes that it has a lot to say about Adam. And there are other scholars, not just in commentaries, who take this position. Now, why do you think some people see Adam in Ezekiel 28, verses 11 through 19?
Because it talks about him being perfect.
Perfect?
Or in Eden.
Eden? Perfect, Eden, uh-huh.
Iniquity was found in him.
You could refer after the fall. Yeah.
He was beautiful. Obviously, the first man was.
Yep.
But I think the place is Eden, but it is the devil in Eden.
Okay, so we're saying that definitely has something to do with the king of Tyre, and there's things suggesting to Adam, but we're also saying here, at least Brian is, and I see a few nods, there were some references earlier, we want to get the devil in. We think he's there. Yep.
Just out of interest, who could be in the position of just talking about the king of Tyre?
I jotted some of those down. Who says it was just the king of Tyre? William Greenhill, the Puritan, he says it just referred to the king of Tyre. And Poole, Matthew Poole. Yep. Significant commentators. So I'm going to give you several reasons, pulling together what you've said and under various heads. The argument that Adam is spoken of or alluded to here is concerned first of all, is based first of all on the references to place. Verse 13, I think William referred to that. Verse 13 says, "Thou hast been in Eden." And then it says, Eden, the garden of God. And then it goes on to say that every precious stone was thy covering. And they're called stones of fire. Which, there's difference of opinion on this, but I take this to mean these stones glisten and sparkle. As stones do. Precious jewels do. Now, is there anything to connect precious stones with the Garden of Eden?
Well, doesn't it talk about that there was good gold in there?
It does. Genesis 2, verse 11 says that there was gold in the land of Eden, and the gold of that land is good. There's different qualities of gold, and then of course some gold can be in smaller bits or mixed through with things that you have to do more sifting, but the gold in that land is good. And gold is amongst the worthy objects mentioned in Ezekiel 28, verse 13. Genesis 2 verse 12 also mentions a couple of other jewels, although it's hard to know what the Hebrew refers to exactly, but our English version speaks of delium and onyx. Genesis 2 verse 12 refers to delium and onyx, and the word onyx is found amongst the many stones mentioned in Genesis 28 verse 13. So it says here that you were in Eden, the garden of God, with all these precious stones, and in Genesis 2, onyx, delium, and gold are mentioned. Now there's another reference to a place in Ezekiel 28, verse 11, a phrase which is used twice in this passage.
The mountain of God.
The mountain of God. The mountain of God is mentioned in verse 14 and verse 16. Is the Garden of Eden on a mountain? Brian says no.
Don't think so.
Doesn't think so. Okay, that's a slight weakening.
It wouldn't be. It wouldn't be.
But you're open. You're not dogmatic. You're open to persuasion. But the Garden of Eden, I believe, was on a mountain. It was on a mountain because, if you think of the description of the Garden of Eden in Genesis 2, there was a river, right? And then the river divides into four heads. And rivers flow downhill, which means rivers start off in the uphill region. So to put all that together, the Garden of Eden, obviously it wasn't on the side of a mountain, you know, it's 50 degrees or anything like that, was on some sort of a fairly level plateau type, high up plateau, and then the river came out of it, and then the river divided into four. And then after the flood, of course, the topography changed, and there is no one river which now divides up into the Euphrates and Tigris, for instance. So, the mountain of God also fits with the Garden of Eden. It was the mountain of God. Verse 14 calls it the holy mountain of God. But it certainly was holy because God dwelt there. So when you read Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19, in the place, it's called Eden, the garden of God, there's precious stones and gold in it, and then it's the mountain of God, the holy mountain of God. Now somebody could say, well, the palace of the king of Tyre, you know, it was a glorious place and there were jewels and it was just like Eden. You know, but is it going too far? Now, let's build up our case. Verse 13, the last word, is created. It refers to him in the day that thou wast created. Verse 15, thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created. Is that the coronation of the king of Tyre? Created, said twice, and in the day in which thou wast created. I mean, that's the sixth day of Adam. That's at the very least suggestive. So we have the place, we have the reference to creation, and then we have the references to perfection and gifts. Verse 12. Thus saith the Lord God, thou sealest up the sum, you bring it to completion, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Now verse 17 uses the words beauty and wisdom and then also brightness and splendor. Verse 15 says, perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created. Perfect in thy ways. Now, perfect in thy ways suggests something like sinlessness and full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. These words could be taken in a much more absolute sense with regard to Adam than they could to the king of Tyre. Perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created. So was he perfect on the day in which he was created? And then he sinned after he became a king, but God has said about that ungodly, unregenerate man, that relatively speaking was perfect, and then after he came to the throne, he sinned and then God judged him.
It's not fair to say though that first and foremost that is who the passage is referring to.
The king of Tyre. Yes. Yes, I want to be very clear with this. It is referring to the king of Tyre, so it starts. Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre and say to him. You know? But that's why I introduced the first view as saying that, as the first view as being that these, that some say that the king of Tyre is only spoken of. And I don't think it's enough to say that the king of Tyre is spoken of. I think there's more to it than that.
Same, but in some sense, he wasn't perfect in regard to being sinless, but maybe perfect in his reign.
Uh-huh. He was perfect, but then he hadn't reigned yet, but he was perfect when he came to the throne. Did you say he was perfect for the first wee bit after he came to the throne, and then he fell?
I was referring to him though, isn't it, when I said that he was perfect. You say it couldn't solely be talked about him because God wouldn't make him perfect because it doesn't make sense, but in some sense it does have to make sense because it is referring to him.
Okay, now this is a wider hermeneutical issue. Probably best by drawing analogies. Reverend McGowan preached 10 sermons on Matthew 24 verses 1 through 31. He said that that prophecy deals with the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70 and the second coming of Jesus Christ, with one being the foreshadowing of the other. In Isaiah 13 and 14, it's a judgment upon Babylon. But there are things in the passage which go beyond Babylon and describe the end of the world. So it's fall of Babylon there and the end of the world. In the book of Revelation, you have a description of the Roman Empire and description of the final anti-Christian kingdom. Now those who hold that only Adam is spoken, only the king of Tyre spoken of in Ezekiel 20, would say, yeah, there are maybe allusions to Adam. But it's not actually talking about Adam, it's just saying that he's like Adam in various ways. And this is the sort of more rarefied hermeneutical discussion. Hermeneutics has to do with interpretation, of course. Let's go a little bit further about Adam. It says, first of all, the place, Eden, etc. Then he was created. Then it talks about his perfections and gifts. Well, then there's a fall. Verse 15 refers to his iniquity. You were perfect in all your ways till iniquity was found in thee. Verse 16 says, thou hast sinned. And then verse 17 refers to his iniquity or sin in terms of pride. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. And then a reference to expulsion. Verse 16, thou hast sinned, this is in the middle of the verse, thou hast sinned, therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God. Anybody hear echoes of Genesis 3 there? So you see what's happening in this passage. The king of Tyre, he's the one that's addressed, but then there's a lot here that fits better with Adam in the garden. At the very least, he's being alluded to. And there are some striking parallels between these two individual men. things that are drawn out by the prophet by the Spirit of God. So the king of Tyre, Adam in the garden, and then the devil. The devil. Now there are some who believe that this passage only refers to the devil. And it doesn't say anything about Adam, and it doesn't even say anything about the king of Tyre. They argue, look at me, with me at verse 12, that this is a lamentation upon the king of Tyre. And chapter 28, verse 2, say unto the prince of Tyre. And they say there was a historical prince. Then another figure was introduced in verse 12 called the king of Tyre. And there really wasn't the king of Tyre. And the king of Tyre is Satan. Now, I don't go that way at all. I think it's the same person. King, prince, ruler, leader. They're called the same thing. This is the view actually held by Lewis Sperry Schaeffer, the leading theologian of a former generation of the dispensationalists. And Donald Gray Barnhouse follows him in this regard. But then there are others who say, you know, yeah, it refers to the king of Tyre, and there's references that best fed Adam, and there's some things here that best fit the devil. Now you're all mulling this over. Yeah, it's not easy tonight, is it? This idea of the place being the Garden of Eden, was the devil in the Garden of Eden?
Yes.
He was. He was there after his own fall, though. Genesis 3 refers to him being there after his own fall. Do you think the devil was in the Garden of Eden before his own fall?
Maybe.
He may have been. What things would suggest that he might have been there? Okay. The angels go up and down between heaven and earth, and they're going to come down to earth, and even then there was some form of care for human beings. So, you know, there's not much point going to somewhere where they're going to be where Adam and Eve are. Mm-hmm. You know? And then the angels themselves rejoiced in the creation, which was all very good. So they take a real interest in it. Job 38 verse 7 speaks of them shouting for joy. So he may well have been in Eden before his fall, but I mean, you can't say for sure. Now this reference to Eden, though, does it more naturally suggest Adam or Satan? I would have thought it more naturally suggested Adam. I would say it more naturally suggests Satan than the king of Tyre. But then somebody could say that the point isn't that the king of Tyre. See, the verse says, thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. I mean, the king of Tyre wasn't in Eden. But then somebody could say what it means is that his palace is so ornate that it was as if he was in Eden because there was all these precious jewels around him. Let's just go on there. The devil. Now, we've talked about the place, the Garden of Eden and so on. And then we have the reference to created. Remember verses 13 and 15, the day that thou wast created. Now, if someone is created, they have to be created a certain day. And we know that Adam was created on day 6. We don't know what day Satan was created on, but he must have been created in the 6 days. So that might again suggest Adam more than Satan, but it is suggested. Now, in terms of the perfection of gifts, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty, verse 12. Verse 17, as we said before, refers to the beauty, the wisdom, and the brightness of an individual. Perfect in thy ways, verse 15. Now those words, as they sit, which of the three would you think they would most naturally suggest? Adam would be the one you'd think of first in terms of those words, okay? Alright, would you say Adam? Lucifer. You think Lucifer first. Stephen?
I'm still Adam.
You're still Adam?
Lucifer.
You're Lucifer. Okay. I would suggest, first of all, Lucifer, and then Adam, and then the King of Tyre, but we're allowed difference of opinions in this, don't we? You know, Article 12 of the Belgic Confession, that's confessional. What we're saying now, as long as it's within the bounds of orthodoxy, we're allowed legitimate difference of opinion. Now, then we have the reference to the fall. Verse 15 talks about iniquity being found in him. Verse 16, sin. Verse 17, thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. That would fit the devil, I would say, as much, if not more so, than Adam. Then verse 16, thou hast sinned, therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of God. Who would you say that fits better? I would say Adam on that one, Steve. You and I were just disagreeing every time. You thought... You can't win. On the other hand, though, you can't make a case because Satan was cast out as profane in a sense too, because heaven is also pictured in the Bible as a mountain. How do you know heaven's pictured as a mountain in the Bible? Hebrews 12 verse 22, the Jerusalem which is above and so on, it talks about we go up by faith to Mount Zion. See, in Mount Zion is the picture of the church, which is ultimately heaven. And so it's called Mount Zion. It's a high place, you see, because God dwells there. All look up to it. But I would say that fits better with Adam. Now, there's a couple of additional points. We've gone over some of the proofs, as it were, for Adam and said they could also apply to Satan. There are some. There's a reference to musical instruments in verse 13. The latter part of the verse says, the workmanship of thy tabrets, that's like a timbrel, a percussion instrument, and of thy pipes, was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Now, angels are involved in the praise of God, and according to Revelation 5, verse 8, most would take it as meaning that the harps were also instruments used by the living creatures or cherubs there. The angels and the devil, when originally created, had the calling to praise God, but that isn't a terribly strong argument. Somebody could say simply it refers to the musical accompaniment at the coronation of the king of Tyre. I mention it, but don't put a whole lot upon it. Now, the key thing that would lead some to seeing a reference to Satan here is one word, cherub. Cherub. And a cherub is an angel, as we saw. So we're sort of building upon the previous 12 classes, and especially one of them, the one that dealt with seraphs and cherubs. Verse 14 begins, thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. My argument here is that just as there are passages, especially in the book of Daniel, which talk about a historical ruler, and then go beyond him, like Antiochus Epiphanes, to prophesy the final Antichrist, here we have a reference to the king of Tyre, which goes somewhat beyond him to Satan. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Cherub is an angel. The cherub that covereth, according to a very popular view of cherubs, cherubs guard and protect, like the cherub upon the Ark of the Covenant. The cherubs are in God's presence in the Holy of Holies. And then the cherub that covers is appointed to this role. I have set thee so, and thou art the anointed cherub that covereth. Anointed, set apart and equipped and qualified for this particular office, and set apart at creation, because verse 13 and 15 refer to creation. O covering cherub, the word cherub is used not only in verse 14, but also in verse 16. O covering cherub, cherubs have wings, and what do the wings cover? In Ezekiel?
Feet.
In Ezekiel, there's reference to the seraphs in Isaiah 6 covering different parts of their body. But in Ezekiel 1 verse 18, with a couple of the wings, the cherub covers his own body, and which most take to be a reference to his humility in the presence of God. Are you all with me so far? Okay, good. So now, we have the threefold references in Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19. There's the king of Tyre, there's Adam, and there's Satan. Now, it often surprises us here that there are, at the very least, allusions, call it what you will, with these three parties, because basically there are some very obvious similarities. All three individuals, two are human beings and one is an angel, but you can call them individuals, had great gifts, perfection in various senses, wealth, and high office from God. The devil, Adam, the king of Tyre. All three sinned grievously, and then all three were judged by God, so they lost their gifts and wealth and were expelled from that highly honored position they received from the Lord. Right? Now, how are these three individuals related? Well, the basic history of the king of Tyre and Adam is the same. The basic history, there they are, given their position by God with great gifts, they sin grievously, God judges them, so they lose their high status, and that's the basic history of Satan too. But then Satan stands behind the two men and deceives both of them, Adam, the king of Tyre, and then animated both of them with his spirit. This is what I believe we have here in Ezekiel 28, verses 11 through 19. The prophet Ezekiel sets forth the glory and fall of the king of Tyre. That first of all, that most basically, and that according to the statement of Ezekiel 28, verse 18. Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyre. Right, so he sets forth the glory and then the fall of the king of Tyre. Then as a prophet, and by the Spirit of God, he presents the king of Tyre with intimations, overtures, call it what you will, of Adam and his fall, and of Satan and his fall. And now I would like to bring out this, that this is Ezekiel's last passage, or section, on Tyre and its king or prince or ruler. Remember I said that Ezekiel 26 verse 1 to 28 verse 19, over 2.5 chapters is given to Tyre and its king. Well then the passage we read and are looking at, verses 11 to 19 of chapter 28, is the finale. And then according to this understanding of the passage that I'm advocating here this evening, in this final section on Tyre and its king, Ezekiel goes deeper into the true spiritual character of Tyre's ruler. Let that sink in a little. And now, if you think you've got this, I'm trying to relate these three parties in Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19. If you think you've got this, I'm going to try and confuse you. No, not. But I'm going to throw in a fourth one. John Gill. John Gill sees this passage, Ezekiel 8, 28, 11 to 19. He sees this passage, this description of the king of Tyre, as describing Antichrist. How did you know that, Julian?
There's only one left.
There's only one left. Yep. And when John Gill is talking about Antichrist, what does he mean? The Pope. He means Romanism and the Pope. And you can sort of see where he's coming from. Because Satan animates Adam, so that Adam falls, the king of Tyre, so he puffs himself up, and thinks that he rules the world, and he presents himself as if he were God. And Satan animates Antichrist. And by the way, if you're familiar with Revelation 18 and the destruction of Babylon, Babylon has fallen, so on, and all the traitors and the ships, no longer, and everybody lamenting in the world. Well, a major, although I actually gave us so understood, but the major even source for the destruction of Babylon, when the smoke's going up and so on, the city's destroyed. The major source for the destruction of Babylon in Revelation 18, and of course Babylon is associated with the Antichrist, is the description of Tyre in Ezekiel 26 through 28. So I mentioned that. There's a fourth one. But Antichrist isn't really presented here. So we're going to keep it just with the three, but I want to at least make that aware, make you aware of that, in case you would be able to follow it. Then I could say that, and that would really confuse you. Now, let's bring all this together and explain a little bit of the significance. If we are right in seeing the devil in Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19, we don't want to see him everywhere now, but if we're right in seeing him in this passage, how does this help us? That question has to be asked. How does it help us? Well, if we're right in this exegesis, and you notice I'm much more tentative in this than I am on most things, then we have the longest passage on the creation, perfection, fall, and expulsion of the devil in the Bible. Though admittedly, not everybody agrees in this interpretation, and it's not wholly and directly about the devil. Right? Then we can say too that we have a passage here on the mysterious work of Satan animating Adam so that Adam falls. There's more admittedly on the fall of Adam through Satan's temptation in Genesis 3. And there are insightful comments in the New Testament especially referring back to that, but here's another one. And now we have a reference to the mysterious work of Satan animating especially the king of Tyre, a rich pagan ruler, and his involvement then in trade and economic issues. We're not saying Occupy Wall Street or something because the whole thing's satanic, but you know, Satan has a role in greed and wealth and traders. A couple of other points. If we're right in this interpretation of Ezekiel 28, here we have support for the view that the main issue in Satan's fall was pride. I wouldn't use this passage to prove it, but it would support that position. Pride. We'll say more about that more well next week. And then, even more distinctive, if this interpretation is right, and that's what I'm arguing here, we have the identification of Satan as a cherub. As far as I'm aware, there's nowhere else that the Bible would be teaching this. A cherub. Cherubs mentioned in verse 14 and 16 of Ezekiel 28. Now, can you give me references to cherubs coming in twos?
On the Ark.
On the Ark of the Covenant. Twos. Two cherubs there. One at either end. There's another one.
Two in the Garden of Eden.
Two in the Garden of Eden. Genesis 3 verse 24. Can you give me references to cherubs appearing in fours?
There's seraphs, no.
Cherubs appearing in fours. In the temple, yeah. In the Solomon's temple, there were two cherubs on the ark. And then there were two cherubs, bigger ones, standing behind them, which made a total of four cherubs in the Holy of Holies. So cherubs in fours. We have four cherubs in the ark in the Temple of Solomon. In Ezekiel, remember there's four cherubs, four living creatures that come with God, for instance, in chapter 1 and chapter 10. And then there are four living creatures in Revelation 4 and 5, and later on through the book of Revelation. So sometimes you cherub in twos, sometimes in fours, and then sometimes we read about lots of cherubs in the tabernacle and round the walls of the tabernacle, loads of cherubs, and the same thing in Solomon's temple, and the same thing in the temple that Ezekiel describes in Ezekiel chapter 41. But one cherub, probably more, but one cherub at least we know, fell, if this interpretation is correct. Taking this to be correct also, if Satan is a cherub, this gives us an interesting insight in light of Genesis 3 verse 24, the first reference in the Bible to angels or cherubs, We have one fallen cherub, the devil, leading Adam and Eve so that they are expelled from Eden, the garden of God. And then we have two unfallen cherubs, ensuring that he didn't get back in again. So you could say it was all about the cherubs, the fallen man, fallen one, and two unfallen ones. And so, I think it's fair to say that Ezekiel 28, 11 through 19, following this line of interpretation, heightens Satan's sin. He does this not only by emphasizing the perfection of his beauty and wisdom, but also that he was a cherub. And the cherubs are in the tabernacle and the temple. They're in the holy place and the holy of holies. They're on the ark and over the ark. The cherubs were there to block Adam and Eve returning to the Garden of Eden, Genesis 3:24. They're God's attendants in Ezekiel and Revelation. Psalm 18 verse 10 has cherubs as being God riding upon a cherub. And then we have in Psalm 99 verse 1, which we sang earlier, that God sits between the cherubs as the eternal Lord and King who's great and high and just. And then the cherubs cover themselves with the wings in humility before God. Then Satan, a cherub, becomes proud and falls. And finally, I think there is something appropriate that it should be Ezekiel who was the one who would refer to the devil as a fallen cherub. And again, I add in parentheses, assuming this view is correct. Something appropriate that Ezekiel should be the one who would say or be given God's purpose to reveal the fact that Satan was a cherub. Why Ezekiel? He saw the throne of God, yeah, that's true. Isaiah did too, in Isaiah 6. You're getting warm though, but I just want to sharpen it.
Apocalyptic?
Yeah. But the book of Revelation is more apocalyptic. Yeah. Well, here's one thing. Ezekiel was a priest who, because he was taken away into captivity, and then the temple was destroyed, never entered the Solomonic temple, and so he never saw the cherubs on its walls. Here I have a priest, but I never get to serve as a priest. And God said, that's all right, I'll show you more of the cherubs than many a priest that served in that temple. And then secondly, and perhaps more importantly, Ezekiel's book says more about cherubs than any other book in the Bible. Cherubs are mentioned, even the word itself, in Ezekiel 1, 9, 10, 11, 28, and 41. So Ezekiel saying all this stuff about cherubs then makes the point that Satan was a cherub.